south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Yep, let's start with talking about the COVIDiot so-called crisis, otherwise known as a plandemic, as it pertains to Latin America, that is, because that's what this show is all about. The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. Well, no matter what you've seen or heard, and I'm sure you've seen and heard plenty, and if you're smart and have been paying attention, you've completely lost faith in that dickhead Dr. Fauci. That goes for dog-faced Bill Gates, the WHO, the FDA, and all those fascist, pseudo-medical, alphabet bureaucracies. So then who do you believe? How about, for starters, the guy who invented mRNA vaccine technology, who just this week came on a number of podcasts that Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the lamestream media are trying to cancel, by the way, saying that the vax that he invented is way too dangerous for humans and no one should be taking it. Now, I hope you heard this right. We're not talking about the usual suspect a-holes in the media spouting their opinion like Fauci or Gates or any bureaucratic parasite on Biden's team, projectile-vomiting choice little sound bites daily. We're talking about a serious statement from the guy who invented and has the patent on the mRNA vaccine technique, meaning the Pfizer and Moderna poke. And if you're interested in hearing exactly what this guy says and why no one should ever take that vaccine, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the links to those podcasts. There's two of them in particular. They just came out last week, and I'm sure the medical, industrial, political complex would just love to disappear this guy. So what are you supposed to do in lieu of taking a toxic vax? Well, you've heard of ivermectin, right? Well, he and a number of very, very prominent MDs and virologists are now saying if they could just get half of the world to take a small dose of ivermectin every week, just once a week too, within a couple of months, the COVIDiot virus will be completely eliminated from the face of the earth. It'll die out because its replication number will fall below one. That without using a single vaccine dose. But you really have to hear the conversations for yourself. This is really amazing stuff. Again, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And further proof that being vaxxed is pure crap, how about this news coming out of Chile, the most highly vaccinated country in all of Latin America? Chile's capital, Santiago, home of more than a third of the country's population, is in complete lockdown, despite more than 60% of their population being fully vaxxed. How'd that happen? So the millions of people living in Santiago, Chile, cannot go out of the house unless it's an emergency situation. Why? Because there's a huge increase in COVIDiot cases. So you have to ask, how could that happen? How could there be a huge rise in COVIDiot cases when 60% plus of the population has been fully jabbed, with at least 80% of the entire country having at least one dose, making it by far on a per capita basis the absolute vaccination leader in all of the Americas? And when Chile's government vaccine medical professionals were asked why so many new cases, how is it possible? They stumble around in interviews saying things like, well, vaccines are not 100% effective, and all of this takes time. And then you've got this guy, Dr. Cesar Cortez, an emergency room physician and government spokesman at the University of Chile Hospital, saying that he still thinks without Chile's advanced vaccination program, the situation, he believed, could be far worse. Oh, you mean far worse than locking down your entire country, not allowing anyone out of the house? I guess they don't call it the COVIDiot plandemic for nothing. Oh, and just one more comment. All you guys and gals out there who have been vaxxed and are as pleased as punch about it, I've personally run into gringo expats myself who are so happy they got the vax. They're quick to flash that card and smile. I've been vaxxed, and I had no side effects. Maybe just a little headache or felt a little fatigued for a day, but I'm okay. Yeah, you get that all right. You know, you guys make me laugh because you don't know the half of it. According to these experts, like the guy who invented the mRNA vaccine, the secondary effects don't always show up in the first 24 hours. It's weeks, months, even years down the line. Oh, and about those pesky variants you've been hearing so much about. If you download those podcasts and pay attention to those experts, including, like I said, the guy who invented the vaccine, turns out the people that are most affected by those so-called variants are people who have been vaxxed. And by the way, these experts are saying, and you'll see that in these YouTubes, that a tiny dose of ivermectin once a week, something like 12 milligrams, will protect people at near 100% efficacy against any and all variants. But don't take my word for it. Send me an email and I'll send you those links. And isn't it funny? A country like Guatemala, that's only about 5% vaxxed, has no emergency or panicky situation at all. The emergency rooms in the hospitals, no more or less filled or utilized than they were before the COVIDiot thing started a year and a half ago. And the country's only 5% vaxxed. Think about that for a second. Whereas Chile, on complete lockdown, is about 60% vaxxed, with more than 80% of the entire population having at least one jab. Meanwhile, in the countries like Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, etc., where they're only about 5 to 10% vaxxed, there are thousands of panicky gringo and expats who've drank the Kool-Aid, listening to Dr. Fauci, Gates, and the lamestream media, and are so dying to get vaxxed, they want to get vaxxed so badly and take the U.S. version of the vax because of bad rumors on the Chinese and Russian ones, that they're willing to pay for a trip to the States just to get poked. Oh, and it's not just brain-dead and or misinformed gringos and expats either. It's wealthier Latinos who speak English and get their fake news from CNN Español. Ooh, gag me with a taco. It's part of that gringo advantage thing. In this case, you could say gringo disadvantage. They want the vax the gringos are getting. Not the ones that are coming here to Latin America by the truckload from China and Russia. Those are for the po folks and sweaty masses, you know. As for the gringos, expats, and rich Latinos, they're all booking flights and getting on planes to get vaxxed in Miami. Yeah, you heard right. Flights from Latin America to Miami are jam-packed with gringos and wealthy Latinos looking to get vaxxed with the potions that first world gringos are getting. Those Moderna and Pfizer jabs. Johnson & Johnson, too. In fact, my friend, the self-proclaimed corrupt gringo expat Boston cop Bob, he just came back from Miami after his emergency flight to get a jab. So when I ran into him just a couple of days ago, he flashed that card with a big feces-eating grin, saying he felt a little irritation in the arm and a little crappy the next day, but everything's a-okay. It was worth the $1,600 or whatever it cost him to make that emergency flight to get that jab. Oh, and here's the scoop on gringos and expats and wealthy Latinos making that flight to Miami. Turns out, the airlines and the travel industry officials are saying that the number of flights to Miami and points north from big cities in Latin America is up at least 150% since January 1st this year, with the majority of people, U.S. travel industry people are saying, for the purpose of getting a gringo vax jab, because, you know, in Latin America, you can get the jab, but it's the Chinese or the Russian one. In fact, according to Rodrigo Ramos, president of the Association of Tour Operators in Ecuador, saying, the preferred destination for the gringo jab is Miami, but when flights are booked, they'll suggest you divert to New York or New Jersey to get that jab. By the way, in the last few months, that trip from Latin America to the States has been so popular. Tour operators are calling it the vaccine vacation. They even promote it that way on anti-social media sites. So as a result of overwhelming demand, a large number of Latin American tour operators have created vaccine one-stop tour packages, if you can believe that. For example, in a typical vaccine vacation tour package, you'll spend 3 nights in Miami or New York, and in that case, you'll get the Johnson & Johnson COVIDiot vax because it's a one-shot deal, supposedly. Not the two jab as with the Pfizer or Moderna, where you come back 21 days later for the second one. Now, according to a Miami travel agency spokesperson, the airfare for the Johnson & Johnson one-shot, including lodging, transportation, flight, and the jab, is around $1,500 per person if you're going to Miami. If you get diverted to New York or New Jersey, it's $1,800. Though the spokesperson said there's so much competition for the vax package, and being that for the past year and a half, travel agencies have been dying on the vine, if you shop around, you can get that Miami vax package for as little as $1,100. And remember, now we're talking about the Johnson & Johnson one-shot jab. Obviously, wealthy Latinos prefer Miami to get that vaxification because it's not necessary at all to be able to speak English in Miami. There's a reason here in Latin America they call Miami the capital of Latin America. But you knew that already, right? Now, as it turns out, about 20% of wealthy Latinos and gringos and expats flying back for the vax will stay 3 or 4 weeks long enough to take the Pfizer or Moderna vax. Those are mostly people who have family in the States. And most people's preferences for the two-dose Pfizer shot, since they've heard, and it's all marketing, PR, and BS, you know, that the Pfizer shot is the most effective. So there you have it. There's a rush of gringos and expats living in Latin America and wealthy Latinos to pop in and out of the States for a vax vacation. Yes, the sheeple have spoken. But like I said to my gringo expat friend, ex-corrupt Boston cop Bob when he proudly flashed his Pfizer vax card. I said, "Bob, I'm happy you feel good now and you're not suffering any secondary effects. But do be on the lookout for a change in your health status over the months and years to come. Because, you know, they haven't done the required 3 years of animal testing. We are the guinea pigs." Then he said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And I said, "Nothing, forget about it." He said, "Johnny, come on, you don't believe all that anti-vax crap, do you?" I said, "Bob, I just have two rules. I follow two things. Number one, the science, the real science, not government or big pharma funded science. And most importantly, rule number two, I follow the money." Which is why Big Pharma doesn't want anyone to hear about ivermectin. It's only 10 bucks a complete treatment cycle, 5 days. It's 10 bucks because it's off patent. Believe it or not, Merck put it on the market 30 years ago. And the two scientists that invented it for Merck got the Nobel Prize for it in 2015. But now anyone can make it without paying royalties because the patent has long since expired. Ivermectin was first synthesized in 1970. Again, I repeat, follow the money. Speaking of follow the money, I just bought some ivermectin at the local drugstore for around 8 bucks for a complete 5-day treatment. You know, just to have on hand in case. Though the saddest thing of all is that you won't be able to get it up in the States. Unless your family doc's really up on things, which he probably ain't. But down here in Latin America, you can go to any pharmacy without a prescription and just say, "Give me a blister pack of ivermectin, please," and they'll hand it right over. Reason number 6,426, why it's really a good idea to have your plan B here in Latin America. Now, changing gears, I feel like talking about my jammy once again. I'm sure you know the biggest news of the last week or so is the collapse of that apartment building tower where 100 or so people have died or are missing. And of course, right after that, everyone living in a high-rise tower, especially in Miami, are scared out of their wits. Seems like after that event, everyone wants to have their building inspected for flaws and deterioration. So then why am I bringing this up? Well, because here in Latin America, as I've mentioned many, many times on this show, the word maintenance doesn't seem to exist in the Spanish language. That's not to say that tens of thousands of buildings aren't built precisely to international codes. Hell, I've driven over hundreds, if not thousands, of bridges down here that have been built 50 to 75 years ago, and they're still holding up to the traffic and the load, though no one knows how long. In fact, I've driven under many a bridge and have seen rust and cracks and deterioration of all kinds that should have been repaired years ago. But here in Latin America, things generally don't get fixed until there's a catastrophic failure, especially when we're talking about infrastructure funded by government. Roads, bridges, government buildings, trains, and subways. Oh, and I don't think since I've been down here 30 plus years now, a month hasn't gone by where I've not seen in the news somewhere or another a person getting hurt or even killed at a Latin American amusement park. Now, I'm not saying all the rides are unsafe. Some of them are brand new. Though, of course, some are very old and rusted out. And you don't have to wonder who's doing the maintenance. No one. And who's doing the inspections? No one. So if you go to an amusement park, and there are lots of them down here, many, just like amusement parks up in the States, Six Flags or Knott's Berry Farm, etc., have been around for 50 years at the same location. Though most amusement parks are of the traveling kind, you know, they set up shop in a vacant lot for a couple of weeks and they're gone. And it seems to me those are the ones that are really dangerous because if someone gets hurt, ends up in the hospital or even dies, they're just gone the next day. And even if you do get hurt, fatally or otherwise, you think those little fly-by-night amusement park outfits are carrying umbrella insurance? I can guarantee you they haven't even heard of it. Now, speaking of infrastructure that's fallen apart, I can tell you from firsthand experience, there are hundreds of very nicely built bridges in Central America that were built over 75 years ago by the United Fruit Company. Hey, they had to get their bananas and pineapples out of the tropical jungle and to a deep water port somewhere to export the stuff. So that was part of the deal. The United Fruit Company came in. Latin governments gave them all kind of land grants, knowing they'd get some nice, free, very well-built roads and bridges out of it, at no government cost. In fact, the United Fruit Company overbuilt the roads and bridges, because we are talking about the tropics and the rainy seasons are brutal. So the metal, the welds, the fasteners, etc., were over-designed by usually 300%. Of course, now, 75 years later, most of that stuff's just falling apart. And when catastrophic events occur, local governments just get out the band-aids and patch them up. So if you think the U.S. government doesn't do anything right, and they don't, well, you ain't seen nothing yet till you move to Latin America. You know, when I get into a conversation with someone who sticks up for the U.S. government, I ask them to give me just one example where a U.S. government department or agency actually stayed on budget and did their job correctly and satisfactorily. If you go through that exercise, you find out most all government programs and projects are dismal failures. But you knew that already, so we won't dwell on it. Now, just imagine for a moment how Latin American governments stack up in that regard, especially when Latino governments want to copy everything and anything the U.S. government does. What a bunch of shit for brains imbeciles, huh? And knowing the abysmal success rate of U.S. government departments and their massive inefficiencies and overruns, like the U.S. Defense Department, Department of Education, Social Security, FDA, NASA, FBI, Homeland Security, VA, DEA, etc., etc., all of them pretty much completely useless. It's hard to imagine, but it's true. Latin American government officials are quick to admit their governments are shit, but their goals and what they aspire to are even more idiotic and surreal. They aspire to be like the bureaucrats in the U.S. government. U.S. bureaucrats and those alphabet agencies are, in fact, their role models. Those abysmal failures we were talking about. But compared to their Latin American agency counterparts, U.S. bureaucrats are superstars. Yep, in the land of the blind, a one-eyed man is king. Which brings us to that May 3rd collapse of a subway line in Mexico City that killed 23 and put 100 in the hospital. And now, a couple of months later, investigators have determined, surprise, surprise, it was caused by structural flaws and the use of substandard materials. Now, of course, Mexico's president, Manuel López Obrador, is trying to put a lid on it because one of his best friends, Mexican billionaire Carlos Fatboy Slim, Latin America's richest and some say second ugliest man, with the first place trophy going to pineapple puss, Nicaraguan dictator Daniel Ortega. Anyway, Carlos Fatboy Slim, President Obrador's buddy, got the contract to build that line. By the way, Carlos Slim is also the owner of Claro, Latin America's IT and telephone giant. Many, many gringos and expats have a Claro SIM chip in their telephones. Could be you have one too. So anyway, now, a couple of months after the May 3rd crash, a Norwegian auditing company was brought in, and they've already found 6 catastrophic errors and deficiencies in the construction of that metro, including missing bolts on girders and unfinished or poorly executed metal welds. They also found deformations and fractures in support beams. Worse yet, but to be expected. Workers and conductors on the metro line submitted complaints and damage reports months, even years earlier, that were completely ignored. So what else is new? By the way, Metro Line 12, as it's called, was built in, get this, 2012. It's not 50, 75, or even 25 years old. It's only 9 years old. And typical of government, who can't do or estimate anything right, it cost 70% more than the original contract price. And if you think it can't get any worse, listen to this. Well, remember it was built in 2012? Well, just 2 short years later, in 2014, operations on the line were suspended at over a dozen stations due to deteriorating conditions along the track. That after just 2 years of operation. So then what does this all mean besides the fact that you shouldn't really trust anything that government does or finances? It's just a wake-up call to the fact that governments need less power and control, not more. Unfortunately, that never happens. But it's obvious, in the first world anyway, that people want more, not less government. But back to this metro thing. Of course, the vast majority of people who take metros in big cities, especially here in Latin America, are the working class people and the poor. That's pretty much the 70 to 80% of the working population that do not own vehicles. Now, personally, I've taken lots of subways and metros all over the world. And though this might seem strange to you, but being an engineer, I like to read the plaques and the dedications and logos when I'm in a metro station or going over a big bridge. You know, there's always a plaque or a brass or stone obelisk or engraving that states the date it was built and the construction details, the company, etc. And I have noticed that most of the metro stations throughout Latin America and the teleféricos, that'd be cable cars, teleféricos are cable cars, built here in Latin America, have been contracted and completed by international well-known firms. Like, for example, last time I was in Caracas, Venezuela, a couple of years ago, I took their famous cable car from Caracas proper up to the top of the mountain nearby. Now, the average person might be thinking, why in the hell would a first world person ever trust a cable car in Venezuela? Well, you know, when I went to buy the ticket to get on it, I read the history of the thing etched in a glass case in front of the ticket booth. Turns out it was built by a famous Swiss cable car company, the same company that did the cable car for the Rock of Gibraltar and countless ski resorts throughout the world. So I had no doubt that the cable car system was up to first world 4-star standard. Oh, another thing, when you contract a first-class cable car company to build you one, just like when a hospital buys a CAT scan machine or high-speed trains or elevator companies like Otis, you have to buy a maintenance service contract or they won't sell you the equipment or build your cable car line, whatever. So when confronted with a cable car, metro system, whatever, I'm always on the lookout and I'm curious to see who built it and how long ago it was completed. Obviously, in the case of Mexico City's metro system, they contracted one of the local construction companies run by the president's buddy, Carlos Fatboy Slim. How'd that happen? Just a coincidence, right? Then again, everything you do in life has some risk. Every time you get in a car or a plane, your risk of injury or death vastly increases. When you go up and down the stairs, you multiply your chances of breaking a leg. So everything you do, every move you make, is a calculated risk. Just like every time you eat a street taco, your chances of meeting Montezuma go up logarithmically. But damn it, they taste so good. Which brings us to this email from Farmer Friday. He says, "Hi, Johnny. I've been listening to your show for 6 months now. Found you through my interest in Bitcoin. I live in rural Western Canada where it gets to 40 degrees Celsius in the summer and 50 minus in the winter. Johnny, I have a neighbor who lives 8 months of the year in Honduras. Anyway, my friend claims Honduras is so dangerous he really can't go outside. I asked him why he doesn't travel to Guatemala instead, and he said that in the rural areas of Guatemala, it can be just as dangerous. He tells me he thinks Nicaragua is the place to go. I haven't heard you talk much about Nicaragua, so I thought I'd ask. Anyway, I fly a 70-year-old airplane for checking crops and cows. I'd sure like to do some flying if I was down in Central America. Just some 20-minute sightseeing trips would be perfect. But my friend who lives 8 months out of the year in Honduras said I'd be likely shot down by the government or a drug cartel if I was to do any small plane flying there. On that note, I had a Mexican Mennonite working for me 1 year, and he had a powered parachute down there in Central America he would fly. I don't think that he'd ever been shot at while in the air, though. So anyway, I was looking for your take on Nicaragua and what you know about flying small airplanes in Latin America. Looking forward to every episode, and I hope to come down to one of your seminars soon. Thanks, Johnny. Signed, Farmer Friday." Well, Farmer Friday, I gotta admire you for having that 70-year-old airplane. I suppose it's a classic, and you keep it ship-shape and original, like Baron von Richthofen with the goggles, right? Well, first of all, Farmer Friday, I think there's something not right about your friend in Honduras. First of all, he says he thinks it's so very dangerous, yet he continues to live there 8 months out of the year. Does that not sound strange to you? Another thing, I can name a dozen cities and areas in Honduras that are very safe. I could live there myself, especially around the area of Tela. Then there's Copan on the border of Guatemala with a fantastic Mayan ruin there. The place is absolutely safe, and partially in the Altiplano, too. Great place. Though I wouldn't live in Tegucigalpa, the capital, La Ceiba, or San Pedro Sula. Though I wouldn't want to live in any big city in the U.S. either. However, just outside practically every big city in Latin America, there are some very excellent and nice neighborhoods. That's what's been happening. The richer people in Latin America are starting to move out of the congested cities and out to the local burbs, 20 or 30 minutes out of the city limits. Oh, and think of this. You know my good friend Bitcoin Dan? Right now, he's in the process of scouting and buying some land in Honduras right on the coast. He's looking at huge tracts of land, kilometers square. He's very serious about setting up his own, what's called a startup city, a sort of exclusive little town for free-thinking libertarians. It'll be a city with its own constitution. In fact, Bitcoin Dan has written a constitution that's 100 pages long. That means, of course, he's dead serious about it, and it's been in the works for some years now. He's got government permission and the vice president of the country's on the board of directors of that project. Stay tuned for more on that. I'll keep you posted. So I just have to ask, if Honduras is such a dangerous place, why would some of the smartest minds in the world pick that country for their startup city plans? Now, I've been all over Honduras many times, and I was never threatened or assaulted. Not even close. Though I was robbed right in my own house twice in my very good neighborhood back in Chicago. So, Farmer Friday, it's all relative, and I think there's something wrong with your friend's story, or maybe even with your friend. Oh, and another thing. In my 30-plus years here down in Latin America, I've known quite a few small plane owners and small plane pilots, and none of them has ever told me he's been shot at. Nor have I ever seen that reported in the news or in the media. Farmer Friday, that makes me question your buddy even more. By the way, I bet you can't guess the top three countries in the world as per the number of business jets and private airplanes registered. So which countries have the most private business jets and small planes? Number one, as you might imagine, the USA. Number two, you'll never guess, Brazil. Number three, Mexico. We're talking about private jets, you know, like Lear jets and such, and privately owned prop planes. Oh, and by the way, you'll never guess which country in the world has the most registered helicopters per capita. Not total number, but the highest number divided by the population. Guatemala. Surprising, huh? Go ahead, look it up. And when you're talking about the number of helicopters, private jets, and private planes registered, so we're not talking about drug lords, right, who prefer not to register their planes. Anyway, Guatemala is number two in the world for the most private jets, helicopters, and private planes registered. So, Farmer Friday, statistics like that make me doubt the veracity, if not sanity, of your buddy. If I were you, I'd tune him out or get another friend. Oh, and by the way, according to stats, Guatemala's military only has 3 helicopters that are active, meaning in decent enough condition to pass inspection and actually fly. Oh, and Farmer Friday, one more reason I think your friend's full of it. You're telling me he says he thinks Nicaragua is the best place to live in Latin America. Well, all you got to do is go back in my archives. You know, I've got something like 1,060 shows up there. You'll find many whole segments on Nicaragua and why I've never recommended it as a plan B, at least not in the last 12 years since I started doing this show. Though I've been there quite a few times myself, and I do know a lot of gringos and expats who relocated down there, and most all of them have regretted it. By the way, most of them relocated to San Juan del Sur, the sleepy little beach town that's now just full of gringos and tourists. Luckily, it's far enough away from Managua so that the dictatorial power and the human rights abuses of Daniel Ortega are not so apparent. Old Pineapple Puss is the main reason I don't recommend the place. First of all, he changed the constitution so he could get elected over and over again. This will be his 4th term coming up. And think about it. The stuff he does doesn't even happen in Venezuela. For example, not even Venezuela's Chavez or Maduro have had the balls to jail every one of their opposition candidates before an election. Ortega's also jailed a huge number of activists and journalists. Ortega rounded up all his enemies recently, all in a matter of days. So basically, he had those people kidnapped. And then he had his security forces ransack the homes of all his opposition, including businessmen who were donating and supporting opposition candidates. He also closed down all the independent media outlets. He's really turned Nicaragua into a full-fledged dictatorship. Oh, and by the way, he's been accused in the International Court at The Hague of repeatedly raping his own stepdaughter. Luckily, when she became an adult, she escaped, went to the States and then to Europe and filed charges against him. But hey, you know, he's the president and presidents have diplomatic immunity, even the despicable ones. So then why aren't all the international organizations of the world pissed off at him? Well, they are, but no one's going to do anything about it because it's a non-strategic country. In other words, it's got no oil. So bottom line, as long as the guy lives, there'll never be any free and fair elections. And the human rights abuses will continue unabated. So, Farmer Friday, that's just a tiny taste of why I don't agree with your buddy at all about Nicaragua being the best place in Latin America to relocate. In fact, I think your buddy's kind of touched in the head. Though I could be wrong, maybe it's me, but I doubt it. South
of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.